Picture this, 10,000 head of Rambouillet Merino sheep spending their days grazing in the crisp air of the Montana mountains, producing the finest wool in America. These rugged landscapes are our home and have been for four generations. Welcome to Duckworth Premium Merino Wool. Every garment is born from American soil and crafted with passion, pride, and precision. From the sheep grazing on our Montana ranch to the skilled craftsmen and women whose hands knit, sew, and spin every fiber that make up our products, our process is a collaboration of American ingenuity and dedication. With Duckworth Merino Wool, you're not just buying a garment, you're investing in a legacy. Our commitment to growing, spinning, knitting, and sewing our own garments right here in America ensures unparalleled quality with stewardship of the land at our core. And the best part? You can wear our products with pride, knowing that you're supporting local communities and American workers every step of the way. So if you're ready to experience the true essence of American craftsmanship, visit Duckworth.com today. Apparel for the outdoor enthusiast and everyday lifestyle alike. We believe there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing. Check out Duckworth today. Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus. And welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. Hope you guys are having a great day today. Looking forward to this conversation with my, good buddy, Derek. We'll call him a good buddy. We've been talking a couple times on the Instagram. I've had him on the show before, and now we get to have him back on as a repeat guest. So you guys will get to hear from him in just a minute. Want to go ahead and remind you of a few things that we have going on. Really want you to consider coming to the intensive. If you can get there, Eminence, Missouri, May 16th through the 18th, it's $175 for the entire expense. Obviously, you got to cover travel cost, but if you can get there and if you want to sleep in a cabin, it's $300. It is a phenomenal trip. Floating two of the most pretty rivers in the Midwest, the Jack's Fork River and the Upper Current River. It's absolutely beautiful. And we're going to be hearing some really great teaching from A.D. Robles, from Matt Reynolds. And it's just going to be a blast. Would love for you guys to be there. Reach out to me if you want in. The link is in the show notes, and you can go ahead and register. This is a great father-son trip. It's just a great men's trip in general. And years ago, I was thinking, what's the trip that I would want to go on? What would I want to do? I like conferences, but I want something different. And then I just started something that I thought was cool, and I think you'll enjoy it as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. So please consider coming. And like I said, reach out, follow those links. Also, check out the Sons and Slaves podcast. Been loving doing that with my boys. We have a really great episode on Ernest Shackleton. The boys did a really good job. Kind of weird saying you have a really great episode when it's your own show, but I'm biased because my boys are just having a great time and doing a good job with that. So check out that episode. That just came out a couple days ago. By the time this releases, it'll be a few weeks back. So that one's on leadership and Ernest Shackleton as we're going through the book Boyhood and Beyond. All right, I'm talking to Derek Harima. How's it going, man?
Hey, it's going well, Jared. I'm thankful to be back on with you. It's hard to believe it's been 6-7 months, I think, since we last talked, and it's wonderful to be back. And we're, you know, big fan of your show here in West Michigan, so I'm thankful for the opportunity to talk.
Well, that's awesome, man. So I got your name right first time, right?
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. I know it's hard. It's somewhat difficult sometimes to, you know, get all the R's and the E's correct, but it's all good, man. It's I'm thankful to be on the show.
Before we recorded the first time, we had the exact same conversation we did the second time about your last name. And I think I did mess it up when I was live on the first episode. And then I'm very pleased that we got that, nailed that down today. That's good.
Fun success.
Yeah, there we go. Why don't we go ahead and pray, and we'll get into our conversation today. I'll set it up for us, and then I'll punt it over to you. Let's pray. Father, sure. We just thank you for this time. I ask for blessing upon this conversation. Help us, and we want to be encouraging to young men in particular, but those that are in the post-mill stream, those that are in the patriarchal stream, those that are fired up about truth and wanting to tear down Asherah poles and tear down the idols of the day, that they're taking the Boniface option. We want to speak to them in a way that could be honoring of you and helpful to them. And we want to see men last for the long haul. We don't want to see men get all fired up and then burn out or burn their people out that are around them. And so help us to give some gentle and yet strong counsel to them on ways that they can be faithful and not burn bridges unnecessarily. And help us to do this with in a way that honors you. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So let me set this up. The names I'm going to mention are names of men that I respect. So if you hear it, and fellas, if you're listening into this and you hear like, hey, that's me, just know that I love you. So I really love Doug Wilson. I love what God has done in his life and through his life into our life, into our church. I love Michael Foster. I love the influence that he's had on me and our church and the men in our church, and have been really influenced and encouraged by Foster. I love Toby Sumter and the guys out at Cross Politic. Those guys, I really appreciate them. I've learned a lot from them. And I love the Ogden boys. I know the Ogden guys the most and have just spent a lot of time over the years just learning from them. And I appreciate those guys and have just been friends with them. They've been great to me. We've known them for quite a while now. So when I speak about this, I don't want to speak disparagingly about them. But I do want to give words of caution to those that follow all these groups, all these crews, even folks that may listen to my show and walk away from my show on certain episodes fired up to do something or motivated to do something or to take action or to talk to their pastors or talk to their church members and get really excited about the truth and then maybe don't know what to do with it. And so here's what I see all over the place. I see young guys that are fired up. They're taking the Boniface option and there is a wake of damage behind them, and they can justify their actions. They will say things like truth and love, truth and love, truth and love, even though primarily this is truth, 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 truth. And they don't want to be soft. They want to be strong. They want to lead. They want to do the right things. But youth and zeal without wisdom often leads to bad places. And I think there is a swath of young men right now, primarily visible on the internet, that are listening to the Ogden boys and are listening, Ogden men, sorry, fellas, not mean to talk to you like your boys out there, but are listening to the Ogden guys and are doing things with some of their methodology or even the Andrew Iskers of the world. And let's face it, they're becoming bad church members. They're not being more healthy and they're online, not walking with wisdom, but they're casting bombs at everybody, online bombs, not actual bombs. And they don't know who's in the trenches with them. And instead of recognizing Jesus' words, hey, they're, you know, hey, it's like the disciples that just preach this in Luke 9. Hey, this guy's over here and he's casting out demons in your name, but he's not with us. And Jesus said, if he's not against you, he's for you. Leave him alone. Let him cast out demons. That's not your concern. And in the fear of some sort of sloppy ecumenicism or something like that, I think in the passion for the purity of the church and for truth to go forth and for Christendom to be rebuilt, young guys are not walking with wisdom. They're casting out the Proverbs and they're taking up their axe. And there's a lot of damage that's being left behind them in local churches. And I think that they are casting stones at fellow brothers and sisters in Christ. And so Derek and I have been talking about this behind the scenes. I think he's got a lot of wisdom to offer. And I just want to pick his brain a little bit. And I'm going to kind of pass it off to him because he's built out some thoughts here. And I'm going to let him talk a little bit. And then I'll interject a thought. And we'll just talk back and forth. And hopefully we can bring some counsel and wisdom to some of these younger guys and maybe an older guy that's fired up. And zeal without knowledge isn't good. Zeal with knowledge is good. Zeal without wisdom is not good. Zeal with wisdom is good. And that's what we need to have. So, Derek, you seeing the same things I'm seeing? What are you thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. And I echo everything that you said prior. Guys like Doug Wilson, Michael Foster, the guys in Ogden, Utah, and wonderful guys. I see numerous people around me benefiting from their ministries. And I've really enjoyed, you know, some of the limited conversations I've had with some of them. But seeing what they post online, I mean, it's all good. It's all truthful. And I think that the challenges come with connecting those ideas, those behaviors. It's all in the same goal of proclaiming the truth and building up the Christendom, advancing the kingdom. We're all trying to do the same thing, but it gets really difficult to say, what does that look like at the local level? I've noticed in my own life and others, we love to talk about the generals. We love to talk about the general ideas. We want to advance the kingdom. We want to stand for truth. But man, does that get messy and difficult when we're talking particulars. It's I hear it all the time. We just got to be faithful. We just got to be faithful. What does that look like in everyday life? So we see people with these practical teachings, like coming out of Moscow, Idaho. Michael Foster's phenomenal at it. Some really good practical teaching. Even Mark Driscoll's got some really good stuff out right now that guys hear and they're like, yes, this is very helpful for me. And connecting it, and you got all that zeal behind it. And not everybody is on the same page as we are, or as they are, or really anybody. We're all learning at different at paces. So the question is, how do you plug some of this in when you've got social media into real life and really help the church grow at a local level at your own church? So some of the patterns I see, I mean, I know there's all, it doesn't take long to go online and stumble on a hot topic. I mean, the hot topic could be what's currently going on with, you know, Eric and Allie Stuckey with, you know, stay at home moms and baking sourdough and what that kind of faithful life looks like. Everything from there to whether it be homeschooling or different schooling options, things like patriarchy or postmillennialism. You know, I got caught up a little bit with the Gary DeMar stuff with preterism and dispensation, all the isms basically. And it's just really difficult to express, hey, I've learned something here, and helping brothers out at the local level. So I've seen some sort of pattern where somebody posts something. It could be on any social media site, and all of a sudden everyone's feathers are ruffled. And there's very little face-to-face discussion on, hey, this is what I meant by that. I was thinking the other day about, you know, we obviously are in the internet age, and I think we've always had to define our terms. Every debate for all century of mankind, you've got to establish and define your terms. But man, is that ever important nowadays? We've got the culture redefining every single term known to man, what it means to be a man or a woman. But we've really got to define our terms, because you can go on any site and see posts that are just confusing. We don't know what, you know, egalitarianism, complementarianism, patriarchy. There are ways to define those and have them be faithful definitions. And there's certainly common ways to define those that are absolutely unfaithful to the Bible. So it really drives home the point that we need to define our terms. And so what I see is, I see a quick hot take posted online. It ruffles people's feathers. People get angry, and it causes a stir. And then it works its way up in the local church. And again, if someone goes to my church, I'm not talking about any specific, you know, situation by any means.
Yeah, you're talking about Bill over there. I know it.
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry, Bill, if you go to their church. I don't know.
But just thinking, okay, there's two sides to every story, and that's a good place to start. There's two explanations. There's what the person was trying to express, and then there's how it was received. And a lot of times those need to be hashed out a little bit. But the way I've seen it play out is, there's always the side that wants unity. Hey, their feathers have been ruffled, the peace has been shaken up a little bit, and they just want to get back to understanding, hey, this is everyday church life. Stop rocking the boat. And then there's another side that, hey, we want to stand for the truth. This is the truth. And what people don't fully understand is what both sides really is thinking. And then there's the aspect of time in all of this, where God has been gracious to certain people and revealing understanding on certain doctrines. And the side that wants unity typically wants peace now, and they never want to look at, hey, maybe there's some truth to that. Maybe what they're saying, though it's uncomfortable or I don't want to talk about it, maybe it would help for me to learn about that subject.
Yeah.
And then you've got the other side that's talking truth all the time, and they don't want to wait for anything. Yeah. They want you to be on their page, in their circle, right now. And they don't even want to.
And they'll beat you down until you are, or you're not.
And they, right. And they don't even want to take the time to talk to you in a men's study or study a book together and spend the 1 hour a week or whatever it may be to explain what they're actually saying here. They want you to read their posts and immediately fall in line. And so we don't typically remember where we came from. We typically we're in a ditch, and then we go into the other side, and we think we're, you know, understanding truth fully now, and we just throw grenades back and forth at each other until we're all on the same side, so to speak. Yeah. All the while forgetting that there's usually a middle path that's faithful and true. And so yeah. I'm seeing a lot of that. So I think that's one of the questions I have as a pastor, because I don't have all the answers here. My goal is just, hey, this is what I'm seeing. And, you know, the more we talk through these things, the more we can connect what we're seeing from again, the guys like Wilson and Eric and Foster, the more we can connect that, the better. So how would you counsel somebody who they just, they're upset about something and they just want peace now. So they say, hey, we need to get back to uniting around, whatever doctrine or whatever it may be.
Yeah. Well, I think the interesting thing about what we're talking about here is that in most churches, the things we're throwing out, the theological terms that we're throwing out and the convictions that we're talking about, they are minority positions in a majority of churches. And it doesn't matter if you're a confessionally reformed church, it doesn't matter if you're Presbyterian or Baptist or a non-denom church, or you're out there and you're at an Assemblies of God church, and now you're listening to the King's Hall and you're fired up and you're excited about good things and right things. But then you turn to your local church and you realize, like, oh, wait a minute, this is a minority position here, and this stuff is not going to be accepted here. And so what I think as a pastor, anytime I see a zealous young man, I want to be encouraging of that young man. But what a lot of these guys need when they embrace these minority positions, you go run around saying, like, yeah, a biblical patriarchy, baby. There is 5% of the churches in America that know, or less than that, probably 2% of the churches in America that know what you're talking about and that are actually following the conversation of the differences between complementarianism and patriarchy. And it's just such a minority position as far as trying to articulate that. And so a lot of these young guys, my counsel would be to them, if those are my church, I'd be very encouraging of them, but would want them. There's going to be some things that you just need to hold on to, keep that zeal, but you need some time to walk in wisdom on applying some of these things. And then in time, you can have some of these conversations, but you don't need to convert the entire church to be a postmillennial church within the next year. And a lot of these guys, because they have the truth, they don't have the wisdom yet to apply it horizontally. And not just when it comes to applied theology out there in the world, in the civic area, they don't even know, like, ecclesiastically, how do I do this at the local church level and have a healthy understanding of what are hills to die on, what aren't hills to die on. And if you are a post-mill guy and a patriarchal guy at a church that's a confessionally reformed church that is predominantly amillennial, and they are faithful to the scriptures, you don't need to blow the church up. You don't need to end up being excommunicated because you're demanding everybody be patriarchal postmillennialist now. Right. In the same way, if you're at a church that's dispensational, you don't have to call them heretics. There are godly people that hold those positions, and you don't have to blow the church up. And you need that wisdom to be able to come alongside and underneath those pastors that are at that local church and those godly men that are older. Or maybe even godly men that are younger that can come along and help you and be the holy sandpaper to sand off some of those rough edges there. And I think it's critical that zeal, that wisdom comes alongside and collides with that zeal. And some of that is just, it's relational and it's time. When you have godly men around you and you have time, what ends up happening is wisdom ends up happening. You suffer a little bit, you experience some victories a little bit, and then 10 years down the road, 5 years down the road, you'll realize, wait a minute, okay, I'm a different man because of these people in my life. And if I would have just made a demand upon them that they all have to listen to the King's Hall now, they all have to listen and read Doug Wilson now, and if that would have been my route, I would have forfeited all this wisdom that's been collected over the last 5 years.
Right. Yeah, and I think as you mentioned, that the quote that comes to mind is, I think it was a Luther that said, peace if possible, truth at all costs, is what I think he said. And I think that's one of those great sayings that needs wisdom to apply. If you're talking peace with the world or you're applying truth to an unbelieving world, I think we should all be willing, any Christian should be willing to divide from the fallen world and say, nope, we're not going to act like that.
Yeah,
I will divide over this issue. I'm pro-life. You're pro-choice. Here's our division. I'm going to be on this side.
We are not on the same team.
And if peace is possible, great, but I'm not compromising here. Mm-hmm. But then we take that same idea to whatever, minority idea, where we're so convinced that our view is the truth on postmillennialism, amillennialism, whatever the case may be, that we apply that same idea of, hey, this is the truth, and I'm going to divide with you now, brother, mm-hmm. in the same camp. Yeah. And I think that's where the wheels fall off, is mm-hmm. we all can agree on the basics of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where just taking the time to have the face-to-face discussions or knowing how to approach the elders and say, hey, this is a conviction that I have. I'd like to talk through it with you. And if it doesn't work, if my view doesn't prevail, then okay, I can still worship here and I can still call these people brothers. I can still have I think the hospitality test is wonderful, because when you're talking with one another, obviously you'd be willing to have brothers and sisters over to your home, but can you have, does anybody want to come over to your home for hospitality? Or are they coming into something that they just think, hey, this guy's going to jump down my throat with whatever minor conviction he has, trying to change me? You know, that I think that that's just, people can feel that, and it kind of are repelled by it, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, I think let's talk about a couple more minority positions that could fit this exact same conversation. So think about political theology and how divisive that's been. And that somewhat goes along with the postmillennial and just the view you take in eschatology. Differing political theologies are not points to leave a church over. This is, in the end, it's not a huge deal. We've got to have proper perspective here about the time that we're living in, the day that we're living in. And if you can find a more aligned church where, you know, somewhere where you're at, okay, I'm not saying that, you know, you have to stay at your church forever or anything like that, but differences in political theology and the application of how God's law applies in the world, that's really okay to have differences there. Or when it comes to gender roles, when it comes to, if you're at a good complementarian church and you now, head coverings have to be cloth. I'm a head coverings guy, but I believe that we have in the scriptures, I think that head coverings are feminine hair or a cloth covering. Okay. That's my personal position. I'm not getting bent out of shape about it. I'm not going to make that a hill to die on. We have people that practice that, and we're never going to say head coverings don't matter, because it does matter. I mean, we can't say that, but what is it? And what you're seeing with young guys right now that are not even married, that don't even have any, you know, they don't even have a wife to help disciple through this, is you'll see guys that make this a point, you know, the head covering issue, a point of division, where it has to be cloth, and these applications, like if you're a complementarian, oh man, and you know, you're a wife that works outside of the home, and that's not 99 times out of 10, that's not the ideal. I think there are exceptions, depending upon competency of the woman and the type of job that it is. It's not, you can't make blanket statements about this. The general counsel is going to be that the man is going to be out working, and the wife is going to, and always make home the priority. But when it comes to the application of these things, it's like, oh man, now you've embraced biblical patriarchy. Your church is complementarian, and man, that's gay. You got to get out of there. You know, like,
well, it's almost like, I had this thought probably close to a year. I remember texting my buddy about it. It's almost like, we all know the cage stage Calvinist idea, where, hey, you start understanding the doctrines of grace and Calvinism, and you get so zealous. I mean, how did I not know this? And you almost would be best put in a cage for a little while. And where I'm going with this is, it's, we're kind of seeing that with more and more doctrines, where, hey, now I understand what, I don't even like to call it eschatology, but just your view of the future, your view of the Christian and the church in the future. And I'm so zealous about it, you should probably just put me in a cage for a little while until I cool off. And we're seeing that more and more. I struggle to know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think generally it's a good thing to be zealous, and long term these things will mellow out a little bit. But it's one of those things that, you know, how do we, again, going back to the beginning, is take these wonderful teachings that are practical, that we've just been thirsting for, practical teaching, and how do we plug it to the ground in our local level and have it be fruitful for everybody, and not beat people over the head with it.
Yeah, without blowing up a small group before you blow up the church. The purity spiral thing, I think the purity spiral thing is really helpful. And you've probably heard me talk about that before, but I think the internet, Twitter in particular, maximizes and fuels purity spirals. Because what you do is you find your group outside of your local church that you align with theologically and with your methods and principles. And you get your methods and principles from this niche group that's online, that's on Twitter. And
I'm having tech difficulties here. I don't know if you can hear me.
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you. I don't know if you can hear me or not. Are you there? There we go. You're back. All right.
I got you now.
So these purity spirals with the internet and Twitter in particular, it fosters this environment where, my crew, my people, my tribe, they're this niche group of the Twitternet, the Twitterverse. That's my, or the X, whatever it is now. That's my crew. And that purity spiral gets narrower and narrower and narrower. And what ends up happening when you purity spiral on Twitter is when you are attending Lord's Day gathering on Sunday morning and you're hearing the word and coming to the table, you are looking with one eye open to the, and you're judging the people in your church because they aren't in this niche Twitter group with that purity spiral. And I think it's critical for us to understand, like, man, we got to understand, we have to have the maturity to understand what doctrines are there that, you know, it's like, man, we don't have to be uniform in our understanding, even with people who agree with the big theological categories. Then when we come to applied theology, these principles, methods, the principle method conversation, if we, you know, apply the principle in a little bit different way, what you're seeing is that you'll find somebody on the Twitter, on Twitter that applies the principle you want it to be applied. And there's your purity spiral. So
yeah,
that's your crew.
100%.
They're applying the principle differently. I don't like it. They're wrong. And they're going to hear about it. And then the passive aggressive post on Facebook or Twitter start.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head 100% with that. And we see that in real life too. And I think Doug Wilson said the internet has kind of created online church ghettos where I'm located in this geography, wherever it may be, but I see what they're doing over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I see their 5 points of liturgy. I see their weekly communion. I see their wine. I see whatever type of worship that they have that I want. And then I look in my geography and that's not available. And all of a sudden I'm mad at the church.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm thinking about moving to Moscow without a job lined up, saying this is, this is wisdom.
House.
Right. And so I think it kind of, it, in some ways, it parallels the conversation with COVID of people that at the slightest hint of turmoil moved out of state. And
mm-hmm.
at the slightest hint of discontent, now I'm unhappy with my church and I want to go elsewhere. And I don't think that's healthy. I don't think that helps anybody. And one of the things that's part of all this is how shallow friendships are. How shallow, we're so quick to move where we think we're going to have the perfect life or the perfect church life, perfect relationships.
Mm-hmm.
We don't feel like we're leaving anything. And I think that that's one of the things that plays into this is we don't have the ability, generally speaking, of deep, typically male friendships that we can have these discussions and we can talk about the sins that we struggle with on an individual level. And we can talk through these things instead of just all of a sudden, hey, this is my stance, take it or leave it. Now, if you don't, then I'm out.
Yeah.
And so I think that plays a big factor.
Let me, I got a buddy of mine, Mark Goldman. He's going to hear this because he always hears and texts me when he gets a shout out. So I've been talking about Mark recently, but Mark has a friend, a mentor of his. And I was saying, hey man, I need to talk to your mentor. I'd love to have him on the show. Would you reach out to me or reach out to him and see if I could do that? And this guy is, he is reformed in his understanding. He's a reformed Baptist and this mentor of his. And listen to this guy's life. He texted me back. He said, Jared, you'd have a ton of talking points. Just listen to this. Okay. This guy now, and by the way, this guy's 63 years old. He, for the last 40 years, probably would have said he's a complementarian when that language came up on the scene in the late 80s. He probably wouldn't embrace, being a patriot, biblical patriarchy. Maybe he would. I don't know. He is not post-millennial, I don't think, but listen to this. Okay. So this guy would not be, he would be, he would maybe be based on the internet. I don't know that without word, but probably not. Like he's probably not, the young guns are not going to go, look at this guy and say, man, that guy's the man. But listen to this.
Sure.
He's hitchhiked 46 states. He's a beekeeper. He's memorized most of the New Testament. He has a PhD in English, focusing on the poetry of George Herbert. He has raised 6 girls. He played college basketball. He's mentored many young men over the years. He has put the Baptist Catechism to music. He's an avid hunter. He's been a pastor for years. And at 63, he bench pressed, I was just told, at 63, he bench pressed 225 like 18 times.
Wow.
Okay. So a guy like that, he doesn't fit the category of what is based by these young guys. But listen to that resume, like
right.
That
what kind of comes to mind is in I'll quote. I think I'm pretty sure this is Brian Salve on one of his Haunted Cosmos. I think it was Haunted Cosmos. It just stuck with me. Is you have these discussions with people, and some people understand the point you're trying to get across, and some people never will. And at some point, you've got to be at peace with what he called stacking fruit over years, fruit stacking. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's kind of a funny way to put it. But he said, hey, from this day forward, we're going to stack the fruit of our choices. We're going to stack the fruit of our convictions. And 20 years from now, I'm going to have my stack of good fruit, and we're going to see your stack of good or bad fruit. And not that we're trying to be petty, comparing type people, but we're going to see how this plays out when I'm 63 years old. And, you know, and you had me when you said mentor. How many men have true mentors these days?
Right.
How many older men are truly trying to mentor younger men? If you have a mentor, and praise God for the mentors I've had in my life, that, you know, guys that are older than me that I can constantly throw ideas off, and it's priceless. But having, you have to have a certain level of humility to realize, hey, maybe I need to be mentored here.
Yeah.
Man, that's good. And I think that type of friend, those types of friendships are so lost these days, and what a difference it would make. But yeah, I think that fruit stacking idea is just, it's what, something I always keep in the back of my mind of like, okay, you know, maybe we don't agree on this topic. And it is a minor topic, but we're going to see what the fruit is down the road. And I'm ultimately, I only have authority over myself and my family. I don't have authority over other people. So,
Well, I tell you, Brian has such a good way of just everything he says is so compelling. You know, when Brian speaks, I lean in and I listen. He's a younger man than me, but he's a guy that I look up to. And it's, you know, it's the same way, you know, Eric is, you know, a little bit more there. I mean, he walks the polemic line a little bit more than Brian does. But these guys behind the scenes, what a lot of guys don't know is behind the scenes, there's a lot of health there. There's years of fruit stacking that's been happening in their marriages with their children, from the good behaviors that are there, the intentionality there as fathers to their children, their families. Behind the scenes, what a lot of these young guys don't get is the, you know, the everyday life, what their everyday life looks like. And what their everyday life looks like, they see the internet persona. But behind the scenes, you have guys, and all the men that we've mentioned, every single one of them, I don't know them all to the same degree, but they have a very normal life compared to our life. They're waking up in the morning, they have their coffee pot set, and they're reading their Bible, they're praying, they're reading the book that they're working through, or the books that they're working through. They're taking a pen or a keyboard and they're writing out notes. They're meeting with people. They have a very normal life. It's not this, even as they're building institutions, it's a lot of institution building comes with the drudgery of another meeting and another normal meeting that feels like there's no end in sight, all these stinking meetings. And it's, as Brian said in that conversation that you had heard, it's just stacking fruit. And then over time, and a lot of these guys, they need to be building the wall in Jerusalem of Nehemiah. And hey, listen, man, pick up a block and put it in place and put down the keyboard and put down your thumbs, stop typing on Twitter, and then put the next block in the wall kind of thing.
For sure. It reminds me of a guy I love to listen to him. I don't agree with him on everything, but James Jordan, I'm sure you've heard the name. He had a nice lecture but talking about how patience is the hallmark of faith. And that really struck with me of like, you know, we all under, you know, within the church claim to have faith. And faith is not an immediate, this is my stance, fall in line, I want this truth understood now. There's an element of patience where we have to wait. And God has been gracious with us in our understanding. I'm not who I was 20 years ago, thank God. And there's been over time on further understanding, and Lord willing, the next 20 years is going to continue to be growth. But this demand via viral tweet or, you know, whatever post on any platform, it is not fruitful. You know, these guys want to build Christendom, but they can't even build a solid friendship or build a mentorship. And I think that's concerning. And I think you referenced Nehemiah. I think one of the examples that comes to mind so readily in this discussion is King Josiah. Everybody loves talking about King Josiah, and, you know, Second Chronicles talking through tearing down the idols of his day and the Asherah poles and, you know, tearing Baal statues down. And everyone loves to take that concept and plug it to the idols of our day. And we're just going to go attack feminism and you name it. And what people don't want to talk about is the before and after of King Josiah. Before, he was a man of prayer, and God heard his prayer because he had a tender heart. Our culture hears tenderheartedness and they think, man, that's weak. I don't want to be tenderhearted. I think it takes a lot of strength to be tenderhearted. Tenderheartedness means I can't do this. God, use me. Use me however you see fit. It's not my own strength. So Josiah was a man of, he was tenderhearted. He was a man of prayer. And God heard his prayer because of that tenderheartedness. And then God used him mightily to tear down the idols of his day. And it's a fantastic story, but it ends in tragedy. King Josiah dies fighting battles that he wasn't supposed to fight. He loved battle. He loved war. And what a tragic ending to one of the most prolific kings in the Old Testament. And I think what we need to gain from that is just the need for wisdom. Yes, there's going to be war and there's going to be battles all around the land. We don't have any shortage of wars to fight, you know,
Yeah, right.
theological or worldview battles. But not every battle is a full-fledged war. And there
Yeah.
are times where you need to back down from that. And I
Yeah,
think you know,
that's good.
King Josiah is just that story that we need to see the whole story of it and go from there. No, it's
That's
a
good.
wonderful thing for sure.
Well, yeah, brother, I think, and for everybody listening in, if you're still with us, I mean, you kind of catch what we're laying down here. I mean, you're understanding where we're coming from, hopefully, and we don't want to be disparaging to the young guy with zeal. And if you're out there and you're passionate, you're fired up, and you're like, man, for the first time in my life, theology is coming alive to me. And I understand why people are so excited talking about this post-mill stuff or whatever. Even if you're not post-mill, if you just like, man, I'm just fired up about obeying and honoring the Lord everywhere. Or, man, political theology is getting me fired up, and I'm now going to run for the city council in my town. And you're all excited. Man, do not be discouraged listening to this. But get wisdom, seek wisdom, find wisdom, get mentors, walk with the Lord humbly before God and others. And the lion comes out in time. And you need not to say to damper or to throw a wet blanket upon you, but get wisdom or die without it. And that's what God calls us to. And that's where the beginning of knowledge happens. And so is the fear of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom. And so find that, get that. And hey, listen, man, we've been going for a little while here. I'm looking down at the clock. It's 3:50 already. I mean, it's just
Yeah,
unbelievable. It's just,
wow,
yeah.
unreal.
And so why don't you go ahead? I know you've probably got more notes. We're going to bypass some of those notes and just kind of wrap it up and put a bow on it for us. And just any final thoughts that you have in this conversation. And I'll kind of give you the last word here.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me as I look back, you know, there was a time in my life when everybody was talking about the men of Issachar. Hey, we got to have men of Issachar. We got to have guys that know the times and know what idols to tear down. And there was this really forward march type mentality. And that's all great. I don't think we need to discount that at all, but we also need to remember the men of Zebulun. The men of Zebulun kept rank. They didn't go off into whatever direction they wanted to. They knew their place within God's covenant community. They knew their applying that today, they knew their spot in the church.
That's
And they
good.
knew what responsibilities they had. Easy to talk about the men of Issachar, and boy, do we need them, but we also need men of Zebulun, the men that
Yeah.
knew their spot in the church, and that they didn't go ruffle feathers and fight wars that they didn't need to fight. And I think that's one of the biggest things. And I think also we need to remember we want to win our brothers. We don't want to just win arguments, and we don't want
Yeah.
to win Twitter wars. We don't want to get the viral, you know, hey, this is my platform now, but take it or leave it. It's okay to delete a post if it's
Yeah.
gone too far, you know, things like that. And I think that just the need for a depth of friendship. If there's opportunity for in your local church to get to know men beyond just hello on Sunday, I mean, what a gift that would be to actually have a depth of relationship. So,
Yeah, that's good.
man, this has been great. I'm thankful for the opportunity.
Yeah.
Thankful for this conversation. It's a wonderful thing, man. I appreciate you, brother.
Well, man, I'm glad to have you back on the show, and it's always encouraging hearing from you and for all the people that are up there listening and that are in Derek's kind of sphere of friends or whatever. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for continuing to listen and being supportive of him and of the show. I really appreciate it. All right, guys, thanks so much for continuing to come back, and would love for you to pass it along if it's been helpful for the young guys out there. Go to your pastor, go to the men of your church, find somebody that's been walking with the Lord that has a resume like the guy I just said or something similar to that. It may not be based or whatever, but learn from him and walk humbly before God and others and change the world. Watch God work. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Derek, thanks for coming on the
Amen.
show, man.
Absolutely.
Thanks again for listening to the Shepherd's Crypt podcast. For more information, you can go to theshepherdscrypt.co. Please consider leaving a rating or review on iTunes. And if you want to become a member of the Shepherd's Crypt, please message me and we'll get you on the list. We hope you have a great rest of your day.